Welcome to Trust Tree Talks, a podcast that supports our vision to connect with a kick-ass tribe who are doing what it takes to make their lives shine. We're your hosts, Lisa Schauer
and Elizabeth Holmes.
Thanks for tuning in. We're glad you're here. Please note, this podcast reflects how we speak in our actual lives, and the language can sometimes get salty. You've been advised.
So we're deep into our first season of Trust Tree Talks, and we hope you've caught our other episodes this season. We've been interviewing some of the women who contributed to our forthcoming anthology, Omitted from My Obituary, and talking all things Trust Tree. We're excited about our guest today, Betty Sue Morris, former legislator and county commissioner.
Before we move into Betty Sue's take on politics today, let's take a minute and talk about our candles. Edith Wharton famously said, "There are two ways of spreading the light, to be the light or the mirror that reflects it." We here at Trust Tree are committed to shining a light on women's stories, the stories that have so often gone untold. We want to help you be your brightest self and reflect that light and warmth out to the world. We've created beautiful custom candles with unique scents to remind us to always move toward the light. Our current scents are Inspire, a relaxing blend of eucalyptus and spearmint that transports you to your favorite spa, and Delight, a subtle coconut and citrus scent reminding you of the joy of a tropical vacation. Candles are available through our website, trusttreegroup.com, or by sending us an email at contact@trusttreegroup.com. or at the Van Wares kiosk found in Divine Consign on Main Street. These custom scents are only for a limited run, and all proceeds go to support our efforts to share the stories of phenomenal women. So we're here this morning interviewing Miss Betty Sue Morris, who is a former state legislator, a Clark County commissioner, a leader in our community, and someone who likes the term politician. So I thought maybe we could start there. If you'd tell us a little bit about kind of your path to politician and why that's not a dirty word.
Interesting question to begin the discussion. I actually started into politics just a couple of blocks to the west of here when I went on staff for Congressman Don Bonker in 1982. And it just seemed natural to me. And at that time, politics was civilized. And during my time in the legislature, it was also civilized. And up until the time I left the County Board of Commissioners in 2008, we were civil with each other. There was nothing personal. There were positional and policy differences, but they weren't personal. And the reason I believe politics is an honorable profession, because it is the arena in which the American people work out their collective differences of opinion. We don't go out onto the field of battle and shoot at each other. We're not physical about it. And certainly the conversation and the debates on the floor of the House and on the Clark County Board of Commissioners were vigorous and adamant and from time to time hostile, but never personal. They were always policy disagreements, and they sprung from the fact that there are honest differences of opinion among people in the same state. And in Washington State, the people in the eastern part of the state do not have the same perspective on life as the people on the west side of the state. And so representatives from both sides need to be respectful and remember that that person is elected too, and that person represents people, individuals, families, just like you do. We have abandoned that civil approach in the last number of years, and I am hoping that sometime we will return to that.
You went to work for Don Bonker in 1982.
Yes.
And prior to that,
you had a checkered past.
A very different life.
Yes, I had a very checkered past. I was raised in Wichita, Kansas, and I was raised to marry someone who was going to be remarkably successful, and I would be ready at a moment's notice to give dinner parties. I married a very fine man right out of college who was exactly that model, and we didn't like each other at all. So we divorced in 1969. It was, you have a divorce in the same way that you have a marriage. And this was a remarkably civil divorce, and it has remained such. We had a little girl, and we sat down and we decided how we were going to handle finances before either one of us ever went to an attorney. It was at a time in Illinois when a divorce was hostile. There was no such thing as no fault divorce. I actually was the plaintiff and he was the defendant, and I had to prove my case without going into a whole lot of detail. The divorce has been a really good divorce. And when we had the little girl I mentioned, when she graduated from high school, her dad and his new family came out for it. And we had a big party at our house, and they all came. And then when she graduated from Columbia University, we all got together back in New York. You have a divorce in the same way that you have a marriage. And again, it's a matter of whether you are civil and you respect each other. I remarried in 1970 a very handsome young man. And within about the first date, I decided that he would be mine. And sure enough, he was for 47 years, but he died in January of 2018. We had another son. I was a school teacher while I was married to my first husband. Then my second husband, Bill Morris, and I actually published a little newspaper called the Hazeldale Gazette. And it was all local news, and it was focused on what's now called the Three Creeks area, but was essentially the Columbia River High School district. And from there, I went to the Oregonian, worked for the Oregonian for a couple of years, and then on to Southwest Washington Hospitals, which is now Peace Health, and I was their community affairs director. And then in 1982, the federal government cut back on Medicare, and so all departments that were not direct patient care were eliminated from the hospital, including mine. And so that's when I went to work for Don Bacher on his campaign, and that was just sort of a straight shot to why I'm sitting here today. I emerged as an individual during the women's movement of the late 60s and the 70s. And we think there's a lot of turmoil now socially. There was a lot of turmoil during that period of time, too. You may remember Martin Luther King was killed. We had the Kent State events where the students were shot and murdered. It was a very, very traumatic time. But there was also a lot of support for women emerging. And I think what there is now may be a lot of chatter about women, but not the congregate shove.
We do really feel very fortunate that you have always been willing to help provide that other perspective and to go along with some crazy ideas. Even back when we said, I think that we need to help other women become elected. Will you join us in this conversation around how we elect women in local politics? Because we think that's the start of them seeing themselves as leaders that could actually achieve something beyond the school board, which is an important role.
Mm-hmm. School board's an important role, but so are so many other. And I still think that local government is a remarkably honorable place to serve because it impacts you. That Board of County Commissioners decides whether there's going to be a manufacturing plant right across the street from you or a park. And nothing impacts your life more than that.
I do think that's interesting that you came up during that wave of feminism. And did you feel like more concrete help or support from women? Because Lisa and I've talked about this a lot, like girls now, women are like, go girl, and like, you can do it. And they'll like, you know, make a comment on social media, but will they make an introduction or will they have the honest conversation with you to push you forward? That's hard.
The action.
Yeah, the actual actions. Did you experience more?
I can't tell you. I have never seen myself as a feminist, first of all. Mm-hmm. Never seen myself that way. But there were just things that you felt during that period of time. It wasn't so much that someone said it. Mm-hmm. You felt it. So somehow you have the courage that you picked up from the universe someplace mm-hmm. to be the second woman in the state of Illinois to get a divorce under the mental cruelty laws. And at that point in time, what I can tell you is that it was so socially unacceptable that my mother came to stay with me during the time we were actually in court, and she did not tell anyone why she was coming. She didn't tell her friends. She didn't tell anyone. Only she and my father knew. And the other families in the apartment building where Annie's daddy and I lived gossiped and were positive that Ann was going to turn out to be a juvenile delinquent and would probably be on drugs before she got into high school. But it was, there was this wave, and it wasn't just go, girl, go, which is something you type out on your keyboard and you, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. you click mm-hmm. the enter button and mm-hmm. it shows up. It was deeper. It was substantive. It struck somehow or other at the inherent differences between men and women. And it said, women are good too. They're yeah. really good. And I don't know how else to describe yeah. it.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
It is what we're trying to build with Trust Tree. Real yeah, action.
The substantive that yeah. resonates, that mm-hmm. it's lacking a little substance now, I think, the how we support each other.
And in some ways it's flippant.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
It's very flippant.
Yeah, you can do it. That doesn't help.
So in your chapter, you talk about having a knowing that you're going to win that seat in the legislature. How would you describe that feeling, and have you had it other times in your life, and did you act on it?
The other time I had it was when I said to myself about Bill Morris, he will be mine. Again, I can't, there was nothing intellectual about it. It was visceral. It was that I understood the dynamics of what was going on, that Linda Smith was advancing to the Senate, that the Republicans would fill her seat, and that whoever they ran, I was going to win. It was there. Now, I don't think there's ever been another time when I've felt that aside from those two, but it was there.
But you have a pretty good track record of never losing a campaign, either one that you ran and participated in or you ran yourself, which is...
I will take credit for that.
Should I run for office? I know who my first recruit is going to be.
And she's going to mention who's on your Christmas card list.
She is. Who's on your Christmas card list?
So during your time in the legislature, what were you most proud of that came out of that time?
I think probably the juvenile justice reform, and we did huge reforms in the juvenile justice system at the time. And in some ways, they were more stringent. In some ways, they were less. But I thought that that was a really, really huge achievement. Now, if you ask me that question about the county, I'll have a much different kind of an answer.
Well, we are going to ask you that question about the county, because you came to Clark County. My recollection is things were pretty hectic.
They were. They were
kind of off the rails a little bit. As a staff person, at least that's what it seemed like. What were you focused on when you got the seat? And
well, when I first was appointed, and for the first, you know, couple of years, we were consumed by redoing the comprehensive plan. The former board had done the county's first comprehensive plan under the Growth Management Act, and it had been appealed by everybody. And the Growth Management Hearings Board had sent it back to us to redo. And it was a dramatic time in the history of the county and in the history of the people, because for the first time ever, someone had suggested that you may not be able to do with your property whatever you want. And even in Kansas, we had had zoning and, you know, designated areas where you could build. Is this in Kansas, conservative Kansas? But here we hadn't gotten to that level. And so there was a huge rural-urban divide. And I remember in my first campaign, I ran an ad of a picture of my dad and my mom in their late years. And my dad was hanging onto my mom's arm, and my mom was using a cane. And he had on a coat and tie, and she had on a really attractive pantsuit and a sweater. And they were walking past a Model T. And the caption was, he was a country boy, she was a city girl, but they made living together work. And that was always kind of my philosophy about it, was there is a way to make this work. Now, you may not feel like you get your way very much or at all. Both sides always feel that way. But there is a way, and I think we were much better at it because we did extensive public outreach and really did make revisions to some of the lines that had been drawn in the past. And the big one was the original board had created a zone called agroforest, and the hearings board said you can't create your own zones. It has to be either ag or it has to be forest. And that was probably the most difficult part because that was all in the rural areas. So that was the first thing. But would I say it was my most meaningful achievement? No, I wouldn't. This, I believe, to be my most meaningful achievement, and it was the one time I went, yeah, I'm glad I'm in, got power. I went to the Clark County Fair, and I went into the ladies' restroom, and of all the restrooms in there, only two were working. The rest were out of order. So I walk out of the restroom, and I call, pick up my little phone, and I call Doug Johnson, who's the head of facilities. And I said, Doug Johnson, this is Betty Sue Morris, and the toilets in the bathrooms won't flush. You need to fix them. And that was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. By 2:30, the plumbers were there. By 4 o'clock, the bathrooms were working. And I was like, yes!
I did this.
I did it. So from time to time, it's those little bitty things that make you feel good about your job.
How did you build relationships on the board? So not everyone always agreed, and you mentioned policy differences occurred, but they weren't personal. They weren't attacked. No. So how did you build those relationships?
Well, it's easier when there's just three of you than it is when there are 98 and you have to learn everybody. We were all fairly similar in our political approach. I was probably the most conservative of the three, but it wasn't that difficult. We had our tensions, for sure. And there was a point in time when it was very difficult on the board. But you just live through it. You go home and you say to your husband, oh, that... You have a scotch and water.
That'll do it. Do you have any advice about leading through the divisive times that we're having right now?
I think you know your stuff. You always, if you make a comment, you know what you're talking about, just like you used to do when you came to the Board of County Commissioners. You can back yourself up with data, and then you be ladies and gentlemen. And you talk about the issue. Now, data doesn't become persuasive anymore in this atmosphere because there's something much more visceral going on across the country than intellect. It's something that's deep and it's instinctive, I believe. But that doesn't mean that you can't maintain your own sense of integrity and your own sense of intellectual clarity.
Why don't we pivot a little bit to, you're making trips to California. You have a grandbaby.
I do. He just turned 7. He's not a baby anymore.
Oh my gosh. 7? What?
I know. How can that be? I say it all the time. Yes, I have one grandson. And in my retirement, I have really enjoyed travel. I'm a great tennis fan. And there's a dry spell in there between the U.S. Open and January where there's no tennis, and that's horrible. Because then if you turn on the TV, you almost have to have on the news, and you don't want to watch the news. But I've traveled for tennis. Last in the summer of 19, my daughter and I went to Wimbledon. That's in amazing. London. Mm-hmm. It was
pretty incredible trip.
It was a marvelous trip, and we saw Roger Federer. I used to tell Bill, you have one person who's competition, and if he asks me to run away with him, I'm going. And it's Roger Federer. So we got to see Roger Federer, and we had excellent seats that were almost right next to the player's box, which is right next to the royal box.
Oh.
And we saw Princess Kate. It was a delightful trip.
That's wonderful.
And it was wonderful to go with my daughter.
Some special time together.
Absolutely.
So if you had some advice that you could give to your younger self, what would that advice be?
I read that question when Beth sent it, and I have pondered that and pondered it and pondered it. I'm not sure it would have been possible for me, to be perfectly honest with you about it, but it would have been to be less consumed with what I was doing in my family. I was very privileged to have a husband who supported me every step of the way. And though I'm sure that from time to time he felt neglected, he never said it. And though I'm sure my children from time to time felt neglected and they never said it, but if I were to go back and could remember, I would say to be a little bit less absorbed in what I was doing. But like I said, I'm not sure it would have been possible.
Yeah.
At that time. We are who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And our thoughts become occupied with what they become occupied by. I mean, our brains do, so.
Yeah. Is there a book that you read that changed the way you think or that had meaning for you?
Well, actually there is, and it probably will surprise you, but the name of the book was African Genesis, and it was written by a man by the name of Robert Ardrey. And we used to actually teach this book when I was teaching an honors class at Evanston Township High School. And it is a book that is based on the work of an archaeologist Robert Leakey in Africa. And it is about instincts and about tribalism and about the way we have culturally organized ourselves since we began evolving. And it has a premise that we Your face is, yeah, it should be. Yeah. Nobody will like this when I say it out loud. It has a premise that it isn't because of our big brain that Homo sapien became the most successful species on the earth. It's because of our big butt. Because that allowed us to stand upright. While other creatures had to use four, we could use two. And also because our thumbs will touch our palms, and we could hold weapons. And that the central thesis for the evolution of the human species has been the weapon. And aren't we right back there right now with the fight over the weapon and the guns and bigger guns and more powerful guns? It stuck with me all of the time, and it's probably why I see the circumstances we're in today. It's out of print, but if you can find it, it's wonderfully entertaining reading. Robert Ardrey is a playwright, so he's written it with a lot of...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he talks about how West Side Story is such a perfect description of how we form tribes and we gain our identity from the group and we get in fights with each other. It's just really, if you can locate it through Amazon.com or anything else, read it.
Particularly relevant today.
Stuff. Yes.
Yeah, for real. Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure that wasn't the kind of book you were expecting.
I'm fascinated.
I like unexpected, and I also love it if it's one I haven't read, because I love nothing more than my to-be-read pile and adding
well, more books. Well, add this one to its simple title, African Genesis.
Mm-hmm. I'll look it up.
And there's a line in it, "Not in Asia and not in innocence was mankind born."
Wow.
So powerful a line. I mean, what kind of talent does it take to even put words together that powerfully? So few words.
That's amazing.
I just have one last question. When we asked you to write in this anthology, what was that experience like to finish your chapter, which is what we're hoping? We have folks that go out and purchase the Omitted from My Obituary anthology with your chapter in it. So what was it like to sit down and write a chapter on what you might find omitted from your obituary?
Well, actually, at the time we were saying not in my obituary. And if you had suggested omitted from my obituary, it probably wouldn't have come so easily. But when not in my obituary, it was like I thought about it and I thought about it and I put it off and I put it off and I put it off. I put it off, and then finally I thought, so what isn't going to be in your obituary? Well, that you've worn the same bras for 20 years. Nobody's going to write about that. Nobody's going to write about that. You cut your own hair. And then I just sat down, and it just came out. I don't know how else to say it. And I think, actually, when I look back at the draft, some of the sentences are even repeated, because when I was doing a little cutting and pasting, I got confused. It was fascinating to think about the things about yourself that no one would know, and you're kind of glad they don't know. It's okay if you don't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's not going to make it in the obituary and shouldn't.
And shouldn't, yeah.
Well, it was really fun reading it.
Yeah, and wonderful.
There were a lot of things that I learned about you that I was like, oh, yeah.
It really resonated with me, that the idea that you're brought up to be something and then you take a departure.
You turn out to be something different.
Yeah, and kind of making peace with that, with yourself, that that's who you're supposed to be, I think.
It wasn't even a matter of making peace with myself. It was... Well, now, I shouldn't say a thing like that, because I think I did have to do a lot of reconciling. And I during that time period, you can lose track of who you are, because there's so much stress going on. I remember at that point in time, we were just beginning to do kind of group therapy. And I remember going to a group and on more than one occasion saying something about myself. Someone looked at me and said, "Bullshit." Just straight out like that. Like, you don't have the slightest idea who you are. So it was sort of like a verbal mirror.
Yeah.
I guess.
Kind of a harsh mirror.
Yeah. Well, those groups can be very,
very
harsh. And I don't think people do very many of those anymore. I don't know whether they do or not, but that was good.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
We really appreciate
you. Oh, it was fun. I liked it.
Thank you for listening to our podcast today. Please tune into our upcoming episodes as we talk with more of our anthology writers and reflect on what we've learned. You can check us out at trusttreegroup.com. All our links are there. We'd love it if you'd subscribe to our podcast or share the podcast with your friends. Sign up for our newsletter, follow us on social media, look for our candles in our online shop or at the Van Wares kiosk in Divine Consign on Main Street. And we'd also love it if you'd reach out to a woman in the next couple of weeks and have coffee, have a chat, hear each other's stories, and send us a little note on how that felt. I'm Elizabeth.
And I'm Lisa.
And together we are Trust Tree.